I'm Chris from Nerd Alert News, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Check out all the other great podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome to this very special edition of the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer. Everybody calls me SP. Your reporters for this very special summer edition of the Starling Tribune are Neil.
These people exist, like, in the real world. They're not just pictures.
And Michelle.
The first casualty of war is the truth.
This podcast is recorded live on location in Indianapolis on Sunday, July 24th, 2016, and recast on Geeks.live. We're just a few Gunna Geekers that normally discuss the CW TV show Arrow. And if you're a fan of the show, you know that we usually record live over the internet on Geeks.live via Skype, Blab, Facebook Live, or YouTube. But tonight, we're in the same room for the very first time. Michelle, Neil, how you guys doing?
First off, welcome to Indianapolis. This is actually my home state, so it's actually kind of good to see you guys together. And I'm surprised that the universe hasn't exploded because so much cool people are sharing the same space for the first time. It's like we didn't rip the time-space continuum or anything. I'm a bit disappointed.
I think we're just warming up the space for Gen Con. I think Gen Con has adequately protected the area for future geekdom.
Yeah, and it's too bad that we couldn't have Chris here, but Chris, we know you're with us in spirit in the wilds of wherever you are tonight.
I told you you could have been here. You just got to get in your car and drive, but no, you have to work tomorrow morning.
What, he wasn't willing to drive, like, what, the 12 hours or something to get here? Chris, disappointed.
Just a little reminder that I am not a comic book guy. I'm more of a sci-fi fan, and I feel kind of bad saying that because it's day 3 of Star Trek Beyond out in the theaters, and I have not seen it yet, but I am going to see it tomorrow or the next day. But tonight, Michelle, Neil, and I are going to talk comics. That's right, we're talking DC Rebirth. Catching up with Green Arrow and sharing our thoughts on some other Rebirth titles that we're enjoying this summer.
There's so much goodness that has come out of Rebirth. We all tried to sit around and figure out which titles we want to talk about, and it was tough. We're like, well, I could talk about this or talk about that, and we've been joking that, you know, if we had time for the 20-hour podcast to fill up the SD card on the digital recorder, it would be tough, but we're going to try to rein it in tonight and leave something for Chris and for some future Starling Tribune episodes.
Yeah, 20 hours, 5 minutes, and 16, 15, 14. So we're pretty good for a while. Hey, okay. So, Michelle, I mean, DC Rebirth?
I haven't been this excited about comic books for, gosh, a good 3-4 years. I'm actually excited to buy comics again. It's really just sort of like stoked this flame. It's like I'm just like, back in the 90s, I was such a Marvel girl and everything, and then I just got tired. But this Rebirth, it's like I'm just so DC right now. It's just awesome.
It is. And for a new comic book guy, this was the perfect point to jump in. I mean, I dabbled a little bit in the New 52. Kind of glad I didn't like go all in on New 52. Rebirth has been amazing just for the new guy because you're getting a lot of the tremendous backstory in the one-shots and in the issue ones and twos that is really helping a guy out like me that really doesn't know anything about the universe. So that is awesome. Hey, okay. So while we normally cover the CW television show Arrow during this special episode, we're going to be talking about what happened so far in DC's Rebirth event.
Rebirth. There we go.
As well as in certain titles like Green Arrow, The Green Lanterns, Wonder Woman, Detective Comics, and some of the other titles that we have been getting into. We're going to save all that juicy San Diego Comic-Con news for our regular episode later this week. Neil, you're on that.
Yep.
And in case you're not caught up on your comics, this will definitely contain spoilers, so consider yourself warned. Just a little reminder, all of our past published shows can be found at GunnaGeek.com.
Guys, so if we're going to talk about Rebirth, we kind of have to start with how we ended up here, needing Rebirth in the first place. So, Neil, please, you are a vault of information. You put me to shame. So please, tell us how we got here.
All right. Well, thanks for the kind words, Michelle. But so why do we have Rebirth? And if you think about the comic book industry, so about 5 years ago, DC tried something new with the Flashpoint event. They said, we're having a tough time getting new people into comics. Some of our legacy titles, like Superman, Action Comics, Detective Comics, they're like issue 900. And if you're a new comic fan, that can be pretty intimidating. You know, do you start at issue one? And especially because DC still doesn't have a digital subscription service, there's no way to get a lot of these back issues. And if something happened in the 70s, 80s, or 90s, and then a current writer made a reference to it, it would kind of turn off a lot of people. So they said, we'll try something new, and they started the New 52. And what they did is they wiped out all the backstory, they basically rebooted the universe, they de-aged a lot of characters, and they got rid of a ton of the canon. So certain relationships that we all think are immutable, like Clark Kent and Lois Lane, they got rid of in New 52, and they matched up Superman and Wonder Woman. They got rid of Black Canary and Green Arrow as a couple. They got rid of Hal Jordan having a power ring and made him an outlaw in space with a power backpack. They even got rid of some characters altogether, like Wally West, Kid Flash. And then they got rid of certain groups even, like the Legion of Superheroes and the Justice Society. They're just gone. So what happened is they figured, yeah, we'll get all these brand new readers into comic books. Yeah, what happens if you build it and they don't come? And that's what happened with DC. They didn't get all these new readers. And what happened is a lot of longtime comics fans suddenly didn't recognize DC anymore. It's kind of what happened with Batman v Superman. It's not the DC or the Superman or the Batman that a lot of the hardcore longtime fans, people that grew up on like Super Friends, could identify with. So they didn't get the new fans and they didn't keep the old fans. So along comes Geoff Johns, who is the chief creative officer for DC Comics, editor-in-chief right now, and he said, let's try to bring back what we lost with New 52. And guys, this is where we're at. We got Rebirth.
Yes, we do. And one other thing, the difference between Marvel and DC, they did the New 52, but they didn't have the cinematic universe to back it up. And that is where your name brand recognition comes from. And they didn't have it. And they're slowly getting it back. I would argue that they had a large misstep with Dawn of Justice, but irregardless, at least it was out there. It did make almost $900 million. Just didn't have a lot of repeat customers, so they didn't get above $1 billion. But without that name brand recognition of those movies genning out, those Batman singular movies, the Superman singular movies, Wonder Woman, whatever, you're just not getting the people like me who are new to comics that want to go into their local comic book store, flip open the Comixology app and actually purchase this stuff, because who cares? It doesn't affect me. I have nothing else to associate it with. So that was a different thing. So I think when they get back to this baseline, and it's funny for me saying that baseline because this is my first line of it, but getting back to this baseline really invited a lot of people back to the comics and new people like myself, where it's like, okay, well, DC's starting in your connected universe. They have all these Warner Brothers shows. I want to know more about these characters. And I think that's a big thing that we can't ignore as well. But Rebirth is a very special event indeed. From everything that you've said, it really has been unparalleled in the history of comics. I mean, Michelle, from what you know, do you agree with that? Or do you think of something else momentous like this that would really bring a lot of people into the comics?
I think the TV and the cinematic helps. I was reading a little bit of DC before New 52, and then like I heard they were just getting rid of all these, and I've been spending so much time with them, I sort of was turned off. And what's gotten me into Rebirth, because again, like I said, I left and now I'm back, is it's not so much that, yeah, the movies help, the DC TV shows have helped. There just seems to be a little bit more of a coherent story throughout. There also seems to be a better purpose, better writing, better art, I think, this time around. So I picked up Flash. I've never read Flash before. And it was like I got that first Rebirth. And then it's like, you know, I don't need, you know, I mean, I watched The Flash. Like, why do I want to do the comic? But the way that the writing was in that first Rebirth and that big issue, it's like, you know what? I want to pick up The Flash. I want to pick up Titans because I thought it was really interesting. So it's not just the movies and the TV, because there has to be more to it. I just think everyone is just sort of like, this feels good. There's a good rhythm to it. The stories are there. And it's got a lot of us old timers, I suppose, going, yes, yeah, start here. Yeah, so I think it's a combination of, yes, TV, movies, but the story's there.
Yeah. And what's really important is everybody was, when they heard there was a new DC event coming called Rebirth, similar to like when they tried Convergence last year, is everyone went, oh my God, not another reboot. Oh, like, don't do this to us again. But I think we can all agree, this isn't a reboot. It's been a way they could carry on the new 52. And when we talk about Green Arrow, we'll talk about some carryovers. But it's a way that they can gradually try to phase out some of the things that weren't working. In some cases, acknowledge their missteps and phase in and return to things that were working before. So there's still some continuity, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So
here's the thing. Marvel has their own big event, Civil War 2, and I think they were trying to cash in on like Captain America. I have no interest in it.
I've been reading it because Captain Marvel is a big component of it, but yeah, it's not this special. It's more like, let's get the band together to do another road trip. And this is special. Like I said, I think this is once in a lifetime that you're able to experience this. And if you haven't already, get on Comixology and get some of these things, because you're going to remember reading these issues.
Exactly.
Great. Well, let's hop into Rebirth then and talk about the one shot that kicked it all off. A massive 72-issue book, Rebirth number one, at the $2.99 price point. And not to really get into the nickels and dimes here, but DC did something pretty special. They made all their books $2.99, no matter what you're buying. Now, the caveat is they made them a bit smaller, and some of them come out twice a month. So you'll end up paying $6 instead of $3.99 or $4.99. But I think the math works out, and that's a lot of goodness for $2.99 a pop. And some of those double shipping books have two storylines. So if you only want to buy, you know, the current timeline of Wonder Woman and not the prequel story of Wonder Woman, you can only buy one of those two a month and save yourself $2.99 if you don't like the art or the prequel storyline. So they've made it easy for fans to get back into it as well. But let's get back onto Rebirth, where it all starts off. Now, it's important. This takes place after Justice League number 50, which was the end of the Darkseid War, which is really important when it comes to new characters like the new Green Lantern. And it comes after Superman number 52, which is, and we've heard this before, the death of Superman, but this is the death of the new 52 Superman. So that sets up some of the items, but that's not really the focus. They're just things that happen in here.
True.
I love this. It's very good. And it's mine, by the way, Neil. You're not going to be able to take it home with you. But it takes you through just about everybody that's relevant in the DC universe. There's a page or two on it. Now, the central story is on Wally West. So most of the real big interaction is through the characters that Wally West had previous relationships and interaction in. But they really tried to get the essence of the DC universe in this. And of course, at the end, there is a big tie-in to why things were the way they were, but they're trying to make it better.
Yeah. And we've given all the spoilers. So Michelle, do you want to walk us through some of the steps that happen in this issue?
Oh, how it's broken into chapters?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So with Batman, there's hints of what's to come. Like that whole letter part was a big issue. Thunderbolt with the JSA. Okay. It's been a while since I've read the big one, so yeah. I know so much. So we get the Legion of Superheroes, hinted at with the Legion Flight Ring, Ray Palmer as the classic Atom, Blue Beetles, both Ted Kord and classic, plus new classic Dr. Fate, new Green Lantern with the host Who is Sinestro, Aqualad, mainstream gay character hinted at, the Young Justice character, Damian Wayne, hints at the Ollie and Dinah relationship, finally, Mysterious Mr. Oz, Aquaman and Mira, Swamp Thing and Constantine, Hellblazer came out, that was awesome. New Wally West, and finally Barry Allen. That ending made me cry.
Now, I wasn't a huge Aquaman fan going into anything because, of course, the Super Friends, that was my Aquaman, and that was nobody's Aquaman.
That's nobody's Aquaman.
Right. And so I kind of feel like this is a little contrived because of the new Justice League films coming out and the fact that they're trying to showcase Aquaman. And they even make fun of the Aquaman character in the Rebirth one-shot and whatever. I mean, Aquaman himself is like, yeah, I'm a joke. So they do pan to that. But I think that they're trying to make a really good strive at integrating the Atlantean society into the modern DC Rebirth universe. And so far, it's okay. It's not my favorite book, but I'm reading it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that I think they've learned from Marvel in certain ways. If you take a look at the cinematic universes, Marvel isn't making superhero movies. They're making a spy thriller with superheroes, or they're making a political thriller or a heist movie, or they're picking up all these other genres. And with the Rebirth Aquaman book, they're telling a bit of a political thriller. You're dealing with the attacks on the Atlantean embassy, how they interact with the terrestrial governments, the UN, the US, and they're dealing with, well, matters of state from Aquaman's perspective, plus mainstream Aquaman villains like Black Manta. So they're trying something new there, and I'm still reading, so it's got me this far, and I've never bought an Aquaman book.
I wouldn't have bought it if it wasn't for the upcoming movie, honestly. But, you know, it's been okay. Michelle, have you delved into any Aquaman?
I have not decided to swim with Aquaman.
Yeah, well, we've got the Aquaman somewhere in here. If you can tell, we've got most of the Rebirth titles stacked around the room here. And that's what we try to keep referring to if you're actually watching the video. And it's good. But at the end of the Rebirth one-shot, there was a big, I guess, spoiler. If you haven't read it yet, you might want to actually turn this off and go fast forward a couple minutes. But so I'm going to give you a spoiler count. 3, 2, 1. We're talking The Watchmen, and I was never a big Watchmen fan. I never watched the movie because people told me it's not your thing, don't do it. I actually bought the graphic novel. I have not read it because people told me it wasn't your thing. So I'm a little bit obtuse about this. I don't really get the connection, and I think it's kind of a loose connection to begin with. But Neil, what's the deal there?
Well, so if you've seen the movie or read the graphic novel, there's the character of Dr. Manhattan, which has near cosmic power and the ability to shape reality. And it's hinted at throughout various parts of the Rebirth story that, and this really comes out when Wally West is talking to Barry Allen, try to describe what happens. And he says, we lost 10 years, but somebody took away our relationships, they took parts of our memory, they stole this from us, and they reshaped the universe. And if you're familiar with the ending of The Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan goes away to kind of recreate a universe in his image. So what they're implying, and it's only loosely implied through that classic button of the smiley face with the bullet hole in it, that Batman 5's buried in the wall of the Batcave, that this is all due to the intermingling of the Watchmen universe. And that is kind of what you can infer. But again, it's not blatant. It's not in your face. It's hinted at. And guys, in all the Rebirth that you've been reading, have you seen this brought up again? Or is it just kind of there?
The Titans, they're the ones, that's where Wally West will come in. And in the one that just came out, since we're doing spoilers here, when Wally tries to find everybody, everybody's just like, Nightwing doesn't remember him at the beginning, and all of them, they don't. And then when they touch him, they remember, and they remember their relationships. And he's like, I feel like we're being watched, and I feel like we're being manipulated. And he's like, you need to understand, somebody's been taking away our memories, somebody's been taking away our relationships, and I think it's going to happen again. And he's just like, he's trying to, like, here's this picture, we have to keep remembering each other. And so this is, you know, the Titans, this is where, like, that story of what's going on with the universe, that's where this is going to happen. Because Wally West is like, I've been outside of time, and I need to figure out what's been going on.
I specifically picked this book up, by the way, guys, because of the Wally West thing. In the Rebirth one-shot that came out, I was so intrigued by that heart-stringing story of Wally West trying to come back and nobody remember him. I'm like, I need to pick this up.
And it really tugged on the heartstrings. So two quick things. Geoff Johns intentionally picked Wally West to be the cornerstone of the Rebirth issue because he had a lot of heart, he had a lot of emotional connection. And guys, those final panels when Barry Allen finally recognizes what was lost and Wally has given up on trying to re-enter this universe, he's reached out through the Speed Force to every connection, to Batman, to other speedsters, to Iris West, and nobody gets it. And then he's finally okay with it. He says, you know, I'm going to dissipate. I'm going to become one with the Speed Force. Barry, I'm okay. You meant so much to me. I'm okay. You know, that's it. Game over. And at that last second, Barry recognizes what's going on. It gets me every time. I can't keep rereading that issue.
Then it sort of does that at the beginning of The Flash, too, you know, get that moment again.
Yeah. The whole thing, maybe it's because The Flash is one of the most successful things that DC's got going on right now on TV or the big screen, but the interaction between Barry and Wally really popped for a non-comic guy like myself. I didn't have the background to it, and that was great. But we've gone really in depth on Rebirth. Let's start moving ahead into the Singular comics as well. And of course, we're an Arrow podcast on the CW show Arrow, based on the Green Arrow comics, so I think that's the obvious choice to start running down.
Definitely. So far, when we're recording this podcast, we've had the Green Arrow Rebirth issue, which is a one-shot. And just in case you're wondering, every new title gets a Rebirth one-shot, which gives you the backstory, kind of tells you what's going on, and then they start numbering with a number one after that. And SP, you just figured out how to figure out what the Rebirth title is, didn't you?
I did. You know, when I was putting this all together, it was kind of painfully obvious to me. So these are the one-shots, and if you're watching on camera, you might be able to see it. I don't know about the glare on these, but the DC in the top right-hand corner is black versus black. Blue. So that's one. And the other thing is that the Rebirth name is on the bottom of the one shots and it's on the top of all the rest of the comics. So if you get confused on which number one you're reading, the black DC is the one shot versus the true number one for the series. So that's how you differentiate the two.
So in Green Arrow Rebirth, we've got writer Benjamin Percy, pencils and art by Otto Schmidt, the cover by Juan Ferreira, and letters by Nate Pekios. And I think the biggest thing is it's Diana and Ollie meeting again and setting it very firmly in Seattle like the New 52 was.
Mm-hmm. Puget Sound, Seattle, it's all actually spelled out right in the beginning.
Yeah, and it's that whole... I like the way that they sort of meet, you know, like she's trying to help the kid and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And then they're like, oh, hey. And then that sort of argument that they have, like, this is the first time I've actually read Green Arrow comics. Like, I knew about the relationship and stuff. So I've never really met Green Arrow Ollie, very social justice, you know, yes, I'm rich, I'm the man, but you need to understand, Dinah, I do all these things, I give to charity, and look at all the hospitals and everything that I do. So it's interesting to me to see that.
I got it was kind of a half distinct feel from the Longbow Hunters, which I haven't actually read the entire graphic novel at this point in time, but it's half of that and half of the staunch Ollie from like year one. It's kind of a combination of the two. I think it's the best of the character. I think Oliver is really in there. Now, the kid that they're going to actually save, it's just heartbreaking what happens to that kid in the end. Ends up being taken by who's ever taking these people off the streets. And it really sets up the story as we have so far through issue number three.
And some other really important things that happen. I think there's a slight twist on the costume from what we had before in New 52. And guys, it looks pretty Arrow. Hashtag, there's no sleeves. as well, Ollie for the New 52 hadn't really had the classic Green Arrow Van Dyke goatee. It was more of a beard, more of a 5 o'clock shadow like we had on the TV show. And Dinah Black Canary makes a crack about it, and he trims it down to the classic Van Dyke goatee. So it's back. The character looks like the classic character. And remember, that's what Rebirth is all about, giving us what was taken away from us. So that's very cool.
Kind of reminiscent of what's going on with Stephen Amell right now. Yeah, I'll never, ever, ever do the goatee. Never, never say never, Stephen.
And they really set up a lot of this, you know, who is making people disappear in Seattle, the human trafficking. It's a lot of setup, but it's the rebirth of the relationship as well between Black Canary and Oliver Queen as Green Arrow that I think takes center stage through a lot of this as well.
Exactly. They got a lot of heat going on there right away.
It gets even steamier in the next one.
Yes. In issue number one, you've got basically Ollie and Dinah hooking up. I mean, this is basically what happens. And it's a one-night thing, according to Dinah. She's like, you know, maybe we need to sit back and stand back and collect our thoughts a little bit here. And it's good because Oliver is going to need some rescuing eventually. But it definitely shows how on-again, off-again their relationship could possibly be. I hope they don't do a season one of Arrow on this, but who knows? They might.
Yeah, and we get some characters that we've been following a bit in New 52 as well, especially in the lead up to this through the last arc with the werewolf warg infection in Seattle. And that's really Emmy, which is Shadow's daughter, so Ollie's half-sister in the New 52, who's living with him. And Shadow returns back to the scene in Green Arrow number one.
She does, and it's amazing. And it took me a while, since I wasn't steeped in the comic lore, to figure out who exactly Emmy's father was, because I thought it might have been Ollie, thinking back to the show where Shadow and Oliver hooked up for a little bit. But I was thinking, okay, how's that going to work in the TV show? But no, it's a little bit of a mismatch, because Oliver's sister, half-sister on the TV show is different than this. And Emiko, I believe that's how you say her full name, right? Emiko, but she goes by Emmy. And she comes in, and they set this up so well, because I was full in on these, on Emmy, and just what happens is just heartbreaking once you think that Ollie's lost so much and he's got his half sister there and he's moving back into being the Green Arrow and everything, and then boom, everything's taken out from underneath him.
Yeah, when I reread these, you know, Emmy says, you know, I was raised by a supervillain and my mom's a ninja. So what happens, you know, what she ends up doing, it's like, oh, yeah, should have probably seen that coming. Because Ollie says that my father loved you, Shadow, or something like that. Like, when would that have happened? Do you, or is this something that...
Oh, boy. So in the middle of the New 52 run of Green Arrow, there was a run, you know, kind of nicknamed the Arrow Clan, and it was very mystic. It was probably the best part of New 52 Green Arrow, where Shadow is reintroduced. You find out that there's various different clans all named after weapons. It's worth reading. Maybe we'll do a podcast on it later. Katana is the avatar of the Sword Clan. And Emmy was being raised by, as she said, another supervillain, another archer, who felt that he should be the avatar of the Arrow Clan. But Oliver's dad knew that Oliver had what it took to be this guy, which is why he was kind of brought up. Even though he got stranded on the island, the island was a setup by Oliver's dad to get him stranded there, to fake his own death, to harden him up. It's confusing, but it works, and it's probably the best New 52 Green Arrow that you can get your hands on. We'll probably, you know, as long as this podcast keeps going, there's a lot of comics we could read during the off season.
Yep, that's true. And also Legends of Tomorrow again, too, next year, so we'll see. But Cyrus Broderick, he's the CFO of Queen Consolidated, and we find out that he's kind of one of the masterminds, at least, of whatever this pointy red mask group is. I have no idea what it is.
And it's Dinah, who she's like, why, what, Queen Industries, why does it say that? You know, yeah. she gets him starting to investigate his own company, which is very, you know, like being from the show, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, he's MIA from that company too. It's like he was on the show.
But it's okay because the shipping container had a toilet installed in it.
Yeah, yeah. It's ethical human trafficking, I guess, which is just wrong on so many levels. So that wrapped up issue number 2, titled Erasure. And we rolled right into issue number 3, The Ninth Circle. And by the way, there's variant covers for all of these as well. If you're looking in your local comic book store, if you're buying by Comixology, they always give you the variant cover. It's got one of my favorite classic Green Arrow artists that is doing the variants as well, Neil Adams. Mm-hmm. So definitely check out the variant covers. We still have the same creative team, but starting in issue 3, Juan Ferreira, who was just doing the covers, is now doing principal art. So for Rebirth 1 and 2, you had one artist. Now starting on issue 3, you've got a different artist. And the book does take on a slightly different artistic tone and feel. And some of the characters look slightly different. I think the action maybe pops more, but you're like, he was a bit rounder, not so pointy in the last one. So there are some differences, but guys, what do you think? Did you like the art? Did you notice the art change?
Yeah, but I liked it. I like the art on this book. It seems... It's hard to describe. It's not very heavy. It's very light, which kind of makes sense because he's very much in the movement and shooting the arrows. And so I like how it's just not really too heavy of lines and stuff with the inks.
Yeah, I did like the fact that he pulled the several different arrows at one point in time, and he was able to hit several different targets. I did remember reading that. Now, I did notice that the art changed because I've been looking for the artists and the writer of the book before I read through it, and I noticed that it changed. I was like, okay, I immediately pinged in on it. So it was slight, but I did notice it. Did it bother me? No, it was still kind of the same style, so that's great. Just one other thing that we missed from issue number 2 was John Diggle actually turned up, and he was working at private security. Apparently, he's had a falling out with Oliver Queen, and he's trying to protect somebody who turns out to be somebody wanted by the Ninth Circle and ends up getting dead, and so John Diggle decides to start going down the path of investigating the Ninth Circle himself as well. And then the two shall meet eventually, but haven't yet through issue number 3. Spoilers.
I got a question. So Ollie is presumed dead again. Is this something that is just like he goes to the island, he's presumed dead. He's shot this time, he's presumed dead. Even in the TV show, season 3, he was presumed dead for a while. Is this something that is like classic Green Arrow?
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the Kevin Smith run later on. He was actually dead before the Kevin Smith run started up again in 2001. So, yeah. Ollie's going to be dead every once in a while. I think we can safely assume that that's part of his canon.
So is blowing up his home within 2 weeks of being declared dead. Yeah, that can happen.
Isn't that, you know, that great in the issue where, you know, it starts off with the boat, you know, Ollie's on bleeding on the boat. One of the things I loved about that overhead shot, if you look at the boat and everything, it almost looked like Oliver as the Green Arrow. I thought that was just like a really cool art moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Juan's art has a real painterly style to it. Lots of watercolory aspects. I really dig it. If you have a chance to follow him on Twitter, he posts a lot of pencils and sketches, and he has a ton of fun on social media. So definitely check him out.
In issue number 3, which was really interesting to me, they said something that you don't go after the guys that are being evil. You go after the guys who are enabling them to be evil. Basically, evil is expensive.
Yeah, that was an awesome line.
That was.
But But again, we still have more in issue 3 of the John Diggle storyline. We still have Black Canary on her own investigating the death. And we figure out that Ollie has a hidey hole in the forest as well. He's got a second arrow cave set up in a forest, which is more appropriate. He still has, because every superhero needs it, an IT guy who's helping him out in the background. I think it's all coming together, but one of the things that they've done is they've taken away a lot of what was built up in New 52. And if, again, you think about what Rebirth means, it's returning a lot of these characters to their core principles. And that's how they chose to do it. They didn't just say, oh, we're rebooting Oliver Queen. They're like, no, let's take away a lot of this stuff, take away the relationships. The secretary who was killed off by Shadow was a main character. She died off camera. They didn't waste any time on that.
I got that in the notes. I was like, did I miss that in issue number one? She's dead in issue number two. What happened? Her name's Wendy Poole, by the way. And that was all great. By the way, Oracle, which we've been talking about from the computer standpoint, does make an appearance in Birds of Prey. Go figure.
Yeah.
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 So is Diggle the comics way of bringing the TV show?
So Diggle has come in, going back to New 52, in a couple places. If you were reading Batman New 52, which is an awesome run, there was an event called Zero Year, which kind of looks back at the birth of Batman when the Riddler blacks out all of Gotham City. And John Diggle actually is first shown in the comics during the Green Arrow portion of that. Now, he comes back in the second to last arc of New 52, and this is why they need a rebirth, by the way. So you can stop trying to figure out, well, he was here, but he wasn't here, but he was here. So he did show up in when they were going against the King, who was a criminal super mastermind business person in Seattle. But then he just kind of disappeared, and so did Felicity in the final arc of New 52. So now they brought him back, so I'm happy he's back.
Does anybody have anything else they want to say about Green Arrow Rebirth?
There is a tie, you know, when Dinah is investigating the boat, she does mention searching Batgirl's database. So if, like, the Birds of Prey just came out, it goes through, because I wasn't too sure how the Oracle thing worked about how, you know, Batgirl was shot, but then there was a miracle surgery. So she was Batgirl, then she was Oracle for a while, and then now she's, you know, Batgirl, but she still has her database and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, now I see how that works.
Yeah. New 52 Green Arrow was the only DC book I was reading before Rebirth. So there are parts of it that are worth reading, but I'm super happy where we ended up with Rebirth with this title.
Yeah, I expanded my read list, pull list with Rebirth a little bit, but I was more than Green Arrow because I was just getting into the comics. So I was reading Flash when it came out, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, basically a lot of the same titles that I'm reading now. But now I've got the Titans, I've got Birds of Prey, I've got Nightwing, all books that I don't normally, or I wouldn't have normally gotten. So we have all that, and it's been fun so far. So one of the books that I've been reading is both Green Lanterns and the new Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, and I'm going to talk about them together because it's kind of one story, even though it's two very distinct stories. So I've got the issues right here, and if you guys haven't seen them yet, if you haven't pulled them out yet, the covers are amazing. The Rebirth issue one-shot itself was co-written by Jeff Johns and Sam Humphries, and basically what it did is it introduced both Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz as the two Green Lanterns that are remaining on Earth, as Hal Jordan will then go off and try to find out what happened to the Green Lantern Corps itself. And one interesting thing that he does is he fuses their power cells together. So the two Green Lanterns are one. So Jessica and Simon are joined at the hip and they're trying to work together, but they're both very different personalities. Jessica is more thoughtful. I mean, she was so reclusive that she stayed in her own house for 3 years before she finally got kicked out. She said a couple of times, 4 rooms, 3 years, that's all I did. And she's out investigating the world now. I didn't see how she got the ring, but the ring did choose her, as they all do, as it did with Simon, who's kind of a convicted criminal, but he says he doesn't, he didn't do it. And at this point in time, I have to believe it. So two very different, I got a hothead, got somebody that thinks about, got a man, got a woman, and they're joined at the hip, not romantically, at least not yet. And it's just very interesting where this story has gone. And basically you've got the Red Lanterns trying to do something with the rage on Earth. And it's interesting going through it, but I need another issue for them to help resolve it before I really figure out what's going on in that world. And so far there's been the one shot and three issues out. It's been a fun read. I really like the Green Lantern as a comic character, so it's been really fun.
You know, when we talked about how they were learning from Marvel and they were picking up on different genres but adapting them to the superhero universe, I think this is a classic cop story with the two partners that aren't a great fit for each other. You've got the aggressive hothead, you've got the more contemplative rookie, and it's trying to figure out how these two new partners interact with each other. And because that's what the Green Lanterns are, they are intergalactic cops. So it's a really cool kind of juxtaposition of this genre into this book.
It is, and Jessica's so new, she can't even create a construct yet. I mean, she can use some of her powers, but she can't do the big thing that the Green Lanterns do and create constructs. And so there's a lot that's going to be going on in the future. At the end of issue three, the rage has taken over Jessica. Simon has cured himself, basically, tried to cure one of the villains in, what's her name, Belize. Which was a princess on another world, and then was taken over by the rage and has done terrible things and basically wanted to kill herself when she was cured because of real, kind of a Jean-Luc Picard thing that happened after the Borg overtook him as Locutus. It's that similar sort of thing, just didn't know what to do with herself. And then the rage overtook her again, which was curious that Simon was able to cure her, but not. And then Simon has this thing called Emerald Sight, which I don't know too much about. I need to learn more about, but apparently that's going to help them out in the future. Now, the other book that's running in conjunction with this is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. The one shot just came out this past week, and it went into Hal Jordan actually creating a new ring through the gauntlet, which was a green stone. I don't know where it came from or anything. Forgive me, I'm not a comic book expert. And it apparently, him creating that ring from the gauntlet reverberated in the entire universe of Green Lantern Ville, and they still exist. They're still everywhere, but they were feeling the creation of this ring. So that's going to be important as we go forward and as Hal Jordan tries to figure out what's going on in the Green Lantern universe.
When we talk about those really powerful moments in some of these rebirth books, we talk about Wally and Barry reuniting. The moment where Hal Jordan reforges his power ring and you see how it's impacting all the other hard light, you know, across the emotional spectrum, the Indigo tribe, the Blue Lanterns, the Red Lanterns, the Yellow Lanterns, and he ends the book off, spoiler alert, by recanting and saying out loud the oath. And it just takes your breath away. It is so powerful and so iconic for this character. I don't think they could have ended this issue any other way.
No, and it is literally the first time that the oath is spoken in the Rebirth universe. So I think it was appropriate that Hal Jordan was the one to do it.
If you know nothing about like the Green Lantern Corps like me, is it a good place to start?
I think the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is probably pretty good. I think the buddy cop thing that's going on Earth is just kind of a fun read at this point in time. They're all going to intertwine. And they are, as Hal Jordan leaves, he said, you do have the Justice Society, I believe, right?
The Justice League. Yeah, you can call the Justice League. And it's funny, even when the cops and I think Argus come on a couple crime scenes, they're like, you mean we're stuck with you two? We don't get Guy Gardner or any of the other Green Lanterns. We get you? Oh, man. Like, why?
Just go home.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because then everybody around there gets taken over by the Rage. So I think the Argus guys were taken over by the Rage after the Green Lanterns left.
Yeah. It didn't work out so well for the Argus guys.
I don't think so. But, oh, by the way, Amanda Waller says hi.
So, yeah, I think it's a good place to hop in, Michelle. Hey, Michelle, so while we're talking about books that are you reading, what's on your plate these days?
I am so happy about Wonder Woman in her rebirth.
Rebirth.
She's out, she's saving somebody, and she starts talking about, like, my name's Wonder Woman, and she's like, at first I thought people called me that with the wonder, like, in awe. People should be in awe of me, that, you know. But then she's like, you know, I think people are questioning. That's what the wonder means. Like, oh, I wonder who she is. I wonder where she came from. And she starts having these moments of the story is changing. And she goes back to her home, you know, apartment. And she's just like, there's something wrong. There's something that needs to, you know, happen. And she's like, was I made of clay? Was I born of Zeus? Am I the god of war? And she takes her lasso and she wraps it around her arm. And she's just, you know, all of a sudden it says, you've been deceived. And so from there, there's now two storylines. One is called Lies, and that's current Wonder Woman going and trying to find out, you know, who she is. And so in this one, this number one, she ends up going into Africa, and she's just like, I'm here to speak to your goddess. I give you three warnings. You know, I'm coming here in peace and all that type. And at the end, you know, there's Cheetah, and she's just like, I can't find my home. I don't know how to get home. Like, at one point, like, she went to Olympus, and it's like, this Olympus is a lie. So she just, you know, doesn't know what truth, you know, she needs to hold on to. And then the alternate storyline is the year one, where she is at home, you know, her origins, and she's like, you know, part of the Amazons, but she's the only one that doesn't look up. She's looking at the horizon because she's the only one who is actually from there. All the other Amazons have experienced the world of men. They've come to paradise. They serve the gods, and, you know, we get peace and eternal life. And with the year one, what's interesting with this, you see her there, and then you got Steve Trevor, you know, training and stuff like that. So with the first year one, it's she gets to this tree, and she gets bitten by a snake, and then she's cured, and then shortly after that, Steve Trevor, the plane crashes. So it ends with, you know, Diana finally coming out of this illness and everything, and then Steve Trevor being crashed. So it's these two alternate storylines. If you just want to follow Lies, you can just follow Lies. If you want to do just year one, you can do just year one, or you can do both, like I am.
Out of any of the character one-shots, the rebirth one-shots, the Wonder Woman one-shot was just amazing, leaps and bounds over all of them. If you want to get a good rebirth one-shot, the Wonder Woman is the one to get.
The writer on this book is the phenomenal Greg Rucka, who has returned to Wonder Woman. His prior run on it is probably heralded in the contemporary era as one of the most influential and definitive runs on Wonder Woman. And it's really interesting. Rebirth, as you said, SP and Michelle, the one-shot, it's all about the story keeps changing. And New 52 did that. She went from being born of a mother's love from clay to being born of the pairing of Zeus and her mother on Themyscira. And that's not the classic story. And what also happened during New 52 is she went away from the principles which her creator, Dr. Marsden, 75 years ago came up with, that man's world is a world of hate and anger and war, and the Amazons are guided by compassion and love, but have the strength to back it up. But it's a different way of problem solving. And in Wonder Woman number one, when she finally tracks down Cheetah, you get the feeling that in New 52, she would have fought her way through all these people and then just kind of grabbed Cheetah by the throat and demanded some answers. And what does she do when she finally gets there? She bows down on one knee and submits to one of her archenemies and says, help me. And it's not a return to violence and force. It is based on compassion and being, and, you know, she isn't fighting her way through the jungle. She is asking that they take her to their goddess. It's a very different way of writing this woman, and there has been some controversy on this title. One of the writers who's been doing some of the variant covers just got on social media and said, I cannot, like, I'm retiring from this book. I can't do it. Greg Rucka is editing my art and censoring it. And the variant covers had a bit more male gaze. And one of the variant covers had parts of her underwear showing out beneath her kind of Amazonian battle skirt. And Rucka went, nope, not doing that. And he cropped the cover. And I believe it's Frank Cho. I'd have to look that up. But he said, I can't take this censorship. And Rucka said, I'm in charge of this book, and it's a different way of looking at this character. And it has to be respectful from start to finish, beginning to end, cover to final word. Everything is intentional. And I support Rucka on this one.
One of the defining moments of the Rebirth one-shot was the helmet or the headset or whatever that Wonder Woman, Diana, she actually took and she crushed. She just destroyed it. And I think that was Rucka's way of saying, look, you know, it's no more. We need to start with a new era of Wonder Woman. And I think so far what they've done both in Dawn of Justice and in the books, I think, reflect that. So it's something that I've been enjoying anyway.
Yeah, she said, you know, I shouldn't be able to do that. And I agree, you know, the art for year one, Nicholas Scott is in charge of that, which is great. And then on the lies, we got Liam Sharp. So there is even though there's two different artists, you still get the respect. You know, Wonder Woman is drawn with muscles. You know, she's not like a little stick figure. She is drawn. She is a warrior. You can tell. There's nothing really gratuitous about it, which is great. It's one of the reasons why I'm on board with this. So yeah, I'm really, you know, digging how Wonder Woman's going.
And one of the titles that I've been picking up on, and again, I have never been a huge Batman reader, but I've picked up both the Bat titles, and I'm really digging the new Detective Comics series. So Detective Comics didn't get a Rebirth one-shot, but it did start the classic numbering again. So whereas everything else is starting with Rebirth and then 1, 2, and 3, et cetera, et cetera, this is back to Detective Comics number 934. So where it started before, and it's Batman saying there are vigilantes or a force in Gotham that is going to take out other vigilantes. And it starts with Azrael being taken out. And he's like, the only way that some of these newer heroes can do it is if they get better training and learn to work as a team. So he recruits Timothy Drake, Red Robin, a character by the name of Spoiler, who is Stephanie Brown, the daughter of the villain Clue Master, who is trained by Catwoman, Cassandra Cain, so who in pre-New 52 was Batgirl for a while, and she goes by the name of Orphan. And then the real outlier here is Clayface, who you really empathize with in this title, and he pairs up with Batwoman, which is awesome to see her back in Rebirth as not just a strong character, but a tactical character, one that has understood what's been going on behind the scenes the entire time. And Batman basically says, Batwoman, you're in charge of training these guys. I will help. I will provide resources. But you are a veteran of the armed forces. You are in special forces. You know how to work with teams. I'm not a team person. I can help with teams, but they need unit cohesion, which is more your thing. And together, this new team in Detective Comics starts figuring out what's going on with this army of bat-like characters that look a lot like Batman. If you've seen some of the recent video games as well, look a lot like the characters from the video games, like Gotham Knight or Arkham Knight. And it's interesting. I won't spoil this one because there are some twists in episodes or issues 2 and 3. That I don't want to spoil, but it's interesting seeing how this team is coming together. And it is fantastic to see Kate Kane back in effectively a starring role in a group title again.
Interesting. I've not read any Detective Comics, or if I did, it was like 40 years ago and I don't even remember it. I might pick up a issue or two and see if I like it or not.
Definitely.
So y'all liking everything that you picked up? Has there been any issues where you're like, bah, I don't like?
I picked up that Green Lanterns one that you discussed earlier, and for some reason it just didn't click for me. Maybe it's because I just don't have a Green Lantern background. So I might give Hal Jordan a try and then maybe like keep with that and then maybe go back and try the buddy cops as you described them.
I've enjoyed all the titles so far. There are some that I'm going to give one or two more issues and just see if they really pick up to where I want them. There are some more great ones that are starting to come out. As we talked about, we have Birds of Prey that has just had one issue come out. Hellblazer with Constantine just had its first issue, which was pretty awesome. Nightwing, the first issue of Nightwing was really awesome. Mm-hmm. It ties up all the storylines from Spiral from the Grayson line. So again, it doesn't pretend that Grayson didn't happen. It wraps it up. It finishes all the storylines and it moves on, which is really cool. I think I just want to mention one thing about Titans and then we can move on, is that there's going to be a Teen Titans book as well as a Titans. So the Titans book is focusing on Wonder Girl, on Robin, on Wally West, classic, like 50-year-old Teen Titans. The Teen Titans book is focusing on more like the characters, if you're a fan of the cartoon, that are in Teen Titans Go, or were in the all-new Teen Titans from the 80s. So guys like Beast Boy, characters like Raven, things like that. So they are two distinct teams. Don't go looking for your Teen Titans Go people in the Titans book. They're very dissimilar.
Sorry, Wing. So the one issue that I was not able to pick up at my comic book store, but they're having it shipped over, is the, I believe it's the Justice Society number one shot that was out this past week.
Oh, Justice League. Yeah.
Justice League number one. So I have not read that yet. Have you?
It's on my iPad. I haven't read it yet.
All right. So we might talk about that later on a future episode of the Starling Tribune. All right, guys. Let's talk briefly about the fact that we talked about it last week, and I did go out and I bought it, and we're going to be talking about this in the future. Green Arrow, the Kevin Smith, really hefty doorstop, I would have to say, graphic novel. So one of the reasons why I didn't pick it up is because it's so thick. It's abnormally thick, in my opinion, for a Green Arrow graphic novel, but I have enjoyed paging through it, and we will be talking about that in the future, and we still have to go over Longbow Hunters on the podcast as well. So really cool stuff to pick up if you haven't already, if you are a Green Arrow or even just a DC fan, because that's going to be some of the crux of a lot of the things that's going to be going on in the DC universe on television, because Kevin Smith is going to be intertwined into the television universe a little bit more and more. He's wedging himself back in. He's trying to become relevant again.
That's awesome. So, yeah, and we talked about Ollie coming back from the dead. This story starts off all about Ollie coming back from the dead one more time. So, yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to chat about with the gang.
All right. I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners and our viewers. We really appreciate you downloading the podcast, watching us on YouTube, Spreaker, and Chris, have fun with this one, buddy. Thank you very much for doing the video editing.
If you want to join the fun, remember that you can join our normal Starling Tribune podcast live on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on geeks.live or over on blab.im. And if you're on Blab, just search for Starling Tribune or Gunna Geek. And don't forget that after the show on Blab, we always open up the fourth seat to listener questions where you can chat and share your thoughts about the issue. You can watch the next show on geeks.live. SP, when's our next show on geeks.live? Is that yours?
That would be mine. That's Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Actually, no, it's not. I mean, are you talking about like this week? It would be Tuesday. Well, yeah, actually it would be, because PopX actually recorded this weekend. Sorry, guys. It is going to be Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on geeks.live.
And don't forget to hop on over to iTunes and subscribe. While you're there, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and review. We appreciate that a lot.
Great. And if you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet to @Starling Tribune, or you can always leave us a voicemail at 1-612-888-CAVE. That's 1-612-888-2283, and we'll make sure to play that on the podcast.
Absolutely great episode. I really enjoyed this doing in person. We'll have to do it again. A little fist bump, guys. All right. Any last words before we sign off and open up the final comments? @Michelle Ely.
#I met Neil.
@Neil isn't witty.
Hashtag Rebirth.
And I'm at Stargate Pioneer saying, you stole my hashtag, but I'll go with hashtag Big and Bored. Oracle, I think we're done here.
Woo! Yes! Yay! Yay!
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. This was awesome.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.